Welcome to Sentence to Paragraph, a podcast on the space between wordcraft and the writer's life. Today, I'm joined by my co-host, Darilyn Evans. My name is Molly Martin, and today we are going to be discussing very briefly the 3X structure and debuting our very first plotter versus panster.
Woot woot! Woot! The smackdown.
It's going to be epic. All right. So, Darilyn, let's go ahead and start off with a brief check-in.
I am chugging along with my write every day this year thing that I'm doing. So, which my challenge, my write every day of the year challenge, which is partly just as I've been rebuilding my writing practice, just an exercise in trying to make sure that I'm giving space every day to my writing, even if it's only 5 minutes at the end of the day. And I have crossed 100,000 words. I actually crossed at the beginning of this month, which was really exciting for me because I don't think before that I had written 100,000 words in any given 2 or 3 years. And so to have written that much in six, seven months was pretty exciting. So that was fun. And in that, I tallied it up a couple of weeks ago for a workshop I did. Now I forgot. It was something like 2 novellas and 8 or 9 short stories and a bunch of flash fiction-y things. So it's kind of exciting.
It is exciting. It's not just kind of exciting. It is exciting.
Super exciting. So
there you go.
Yeah. So that part's been really exciting. And, but also, you know, it has helped me get past that I need 11 hours space around my writing time to sit down and get the, you know, all the things. There really is something magical. It takes several weeks. It didn't happen right away. It took several weeks, but there's something magical about sitting down to the keyboard and your brain just, like, as soon as I sit down, it turns on, and it's not like the muses are singing into my ear exactly, but I get to the writing brain a lot more quickly. And so having done this practice, there are a few days here and there where I think, oh, this might be the day it breaks and I will not be able to write. But typically I've been able to sit down and write every, you know, just start writing right away. So it's pretty great. The other magical thing about it is that staying in touch with a story like that, even if it's just writing 250 words one day, the next day I'll be able to sit down and just go and not have to A, remember how to write, and B, what is this story even about and who were the characters and all of that. So I'm feeling pretty good about that. So it's not beautiful, but it's happening. Yeah. So, and I'm getting ready to head to the Willamette Writers Conference in Portland tomorrow, which will have been, you know, months ago by the time this airs. But I'm pretty excited about it. It's the 50th anniversary, and we're going to have a table there for WordCrafters. But Janet Burraway is the keynote, and she as her text was one of my first writing mentors. We used her text in several of the early classes that I took, and she's just amazing and magical. And I'm so excited to get to meet her in person finally. So,
yay!
So yeah. Oh gosh, I think that's probably more than enough for me. How about you, Molly? You've had lots of exciting things happening.
Yeah. So I finished my move. We're about 90% unpacked, and the rest of the boxes is just junk that could probably stay packed up for 2 or 3 more years and we wouldn't notice. And so with all the moving chaos, I haven't been doing a ton of writing, but I'm happy to get back to a couple of projects. And one of the things that helped me get back into it is I had a proofreading project, which is kind of relaxing to me because I'm sort of a perfectionist, and I feel like in proofreading, like, not all the time, but a good percent of the time, there is a right answer. So that makes me feel like my little type A personality makes me feel very happy that there is a definable right answer, because so much in writing is subjective. So proofreading is like a relief for me. It's like, oh, except when we start talking about how things are spelled in English, English versus American English. And so proofreading helped me get back into it. I'm doing an editing project for, actually a couple of other like developmental and structural editing project or a line editing project. And those are also good ways to like get back into writing. And then sort of the nice part about that is then I can feel sort of transgressive when I take a little time away from the editing that I'm getting paid to do. None of my clients will ever listen to this, so I'm okay. I take some time away from the editing that I get paid to do and then do my own writing. So if I feel like my writing is transgressive, then I'm more likely to do it because now it's bad.
That is super liberating to let go of those high expectations, especially on that first draft. Just let it be super, like the purpose of it is to be really shitty, as Annie Lamott says. So, hey, perfect.
Well, and the other thing that kind of dovetails nicely into our topic for the day, which is a little bit of a review of the 3-act structure and how different people approach that is, I myself have been working with an editor on my novel and have gotten a lot of really great feedback from my editor. And so now I'm looking at the feedback that he sent me and considering how am I going to, in the second draft of my novel, how am I going to incorporate that feedback and which of the feedback am I going to incorporate? And then there are so many little plot bunnies that have like jumped out of all of his feedback that I'm like, this is going to be a completely different novel. And now they're just going to be unicorns. So
I think every zombie apocalypse needs some unicorns.
I'll see if I can get one in there.
That might not be what you meant, but now I'm going to have that story.
The zombie apocalypse with unicorns.
Yes. They were never really gone.
Oh,
yeah. Cool.
Yeah. So, with all of that having been said, do you want to tell us a little bit? You had a great summation of the 3-act structure, which I feel like I'm being like overly academic about it. I'm like, well, according to Oxford scholars, the 3-act structure is actually a literary device that has been around since the time of the Greeks. And I feel like you summed it up much more, average writerly.
Well, I don't know if it's average writerly. I took a screenwriting class from Cynthia Whitcomb, who is amazing if you ever get to work with her. And I don't know where this comes from, if it comes directly from her or from someone else. But in looking at 3-act structure, basically act one, the purpose of that is to drive your protagonist up a tree. Act two, you throw a lot of rocks at her. And then act three, you bring her back down out of the tree. Got to get her out of the tree. And I've also heard that said is you drive them up a tree, you light it on fire, and then you get them out of it.
So act
one of those works.
Act one is, hey, everybody, here's a tree. Here's this person. Oh, now they're up the tree.
Yeah.
And then act two is they're up the tree, clinging there for dear life. You're going to either light it on fire or throw rocks at them or both.
Or both. You know?
And then act three is, okay. Now we got to get them down out of the tree.
Right. Or she has to figure how to get herself out of that tree. So,
better yet.
Yes. So save herself. So yeah. And I really loved hearing that because prior to having heard that, it really, I hadn't really even understood 3-act structure at all. But that really helped me understand like what the different kind of even overall big chunks of the story are supposed to be doing. So yeah, there you go.
So we had a question from one of the devoted, I'm going to go out and decide that this person is a devoted fan of our podcast, even
yes,
though they may have never listened to it. One of our most devoted fans of the podcast had asked a question of specifically when we were discussing our new segment of plotters versus pantsers, is how do pantsers get to the end of the story? And since I am a pantser, I feel like, well, obviously we just write to the end of the story and then we're done. Like it's super simple for me. But could I explain how to do that? And so then it's sort of like when somebody asks you to explain, how do you tie your shoes? You're like, I could show you, it's super easy. But if I were to sit down and explain, you know, you take this shoelace and then you cross the left one over the right. No, wait, you cross the right one over the left. Okay. So you cross one over the other and then you take and
falls apart quickly.
Yes. So this question of how do you get to the end made me think of, well, let's not just focus on the end. Let's talk about how do plotters and how do pantsers address each of these different parts of the three act structure. So for today's purpose of today's podcast, I will be playing the role of the pantser and you can be the plotter. And then, you know, next time we'll switch and I'll just mess it up.
Yeah, I want to see how that works.
So one of the things that I was thinking of is that for a lot of pantsers like myself, especially when the story first starts, there's this little...
Actually, should we go ahead and define plotting versus pantsing since this is our first segment?
See, and this is why you're the plotter.
Even before we started, I was like, we need to have a little bit of a plan for how our podcast is going to go.
Let's have some structure to this chaos.
So see, it's important. So the I think that, does this come from NaNoWriMo or somewhere else? But
I think it comes from NaNoWriMo. That's where I heard it first. And I think it's just been widely embraced by the writing community. I've also heard it as discovery writers is a nicer way of saying a pantser.
Right. Well, and plotters are A-type personalities, is that it? although not always true. And taking that A a little further. So a plotter is somebody who, before they sit down to write, plots out, well, I think this is a false thing because it's not all about, I think this falls into that dichotomy of like what it, plot versus character and all of those things. But a plotter is somebody who outlines their story before they start the actual writing, or they, there's kind of a hybrid plotter, pantser, called a plantser, who might do a little bit of plotting and then and going back and forth between the plotting or outlining a story and then doing a little bit of writing going back and forth. But typically a plotter understands the at the very least the overall arcs of the story, character and plot arcs before they sit down to start writing. You want to take pantser away?
All right. So pantser, yes. So pantser is usually somebody who does not do a lot of advance work on the story. And for most pantsers that I've ever talked to, it's more of you have an idea, you have some moment of inspiration, whether it be a character, whether it be a setting, whether it be a story concept, or, you know, some cool little nugget or seed or kernel that starts the story. And then you just take that and you run with it and you say, oh, okay, that's interesting. What else could happen around that? Who else could interact with this? And so you're just doing exploration from there. And I think to a lot of pantsers, it feels like it's a more organic story, that it just kind of, you know, it's like vines taking over your, or kudzu or whatever, sort of taking over the rest of the story. It's like, there it goes. Isn't that amazing? So I feel like a lot of people, I think a lot of people think that, oh, it's so inspirational, and like you just, the muse is there and the story flows and you get these very, I blame Hollywood for it, and things like the movie, I think it was Shakespeare in Love, where it's just Shakespeare has these moments of inspiration and then writes everything down in sort of a fevered rush of like, oh, I have this amazing scene. And yes, that happens sometimes, but not all the time. Mm-hmm. So I think that's where pantsers have more of a problem, is that eventually when you do run out of steam, then you're sort of stuck and wondering what happens, and then you start chasing plot bunnies instead.
Yes. And you might get a little bit off the beaten track further than you can recover from.
Yes, your story can go quite far afield.
Yes.
So with that in mind, the definition of plotters and pantsers, and thinking about our definition of act one being, you know, here's your main character, here's the tree, we're going to put them up the tree. I think one of the things that happens a lot of times with pantsers is we don't necessarily, like, our kernel for the story may not be the beginning of the story. We may just have some scene, and that scene might actually take place in act two or even an act three. And I think that a lot of times when we're writing, we sort of tend to think of writing as being this chronological act. So we think, okay, I've got this scene, this really cool scene, and this is the start of my story. So I have to start from this scene and just keep writing, instead of recognizing that this may be the heart of my story, but it might not be the beginning of my story. And so that's one of the things that I think pantsers need to keep in mind, is that where you start your story is not necessarily where the story starts.
That's a really good point. I think for me, as I sit in the plotter chair, the truth is that I'm a recovering pantser, because I used to pants everything. And I didn't understand story structure at all. And so I would get lost really easily, because it's like, well, where is this in the story? And I'm off in the woods somewhere, and I don't even know where the end is, let alone how to get there. And so what I have found valuable as a plotter is really working with story structure, and understanding where I am in the story, because that helps me stay on track. And it helps me understand, if I know where I am in the story with a particular scene or a particular idea, of what needs to happen there, because certain kinds, and not to create formula, it's not that structure is formulaic. Wherever you are in the story, there's definitely forms of to the scenes or what needs to happen.
What I'm going to do is go ahead and jump over to Act One and just talk about that a little bit from the pantser perspective, and knowing that maybe your story doesn't necessarily start at this point. So I think we're all familiar with the TV show where, you know, it just starts in the middle of a car chase, or somebody's getting shot at, or there's a dragon flying over, or you know, the aliens have arrived, and you're going, oh my God, what has happened? And I think for pantsers, this is a lot of times we're like, okay, this is this really cool dynamic scene, and it's a lot of fun for us to write. But it's not necessarily our first scene. So considering once you write that scene, so here's what I'm saying as a pantser, is what you're going to do is you're going to write all those cool, amazing scenes when you have them in your mind. And then once you're done, look back at your scenes and say, okay, what are the elements in this scene that the reader may not be able to have guessed would be in the scene? Like, what does your average reader think might happen? So let's say you have carnivorous trees in your scene, just because that's fun to have. And I was reading a book that had carnivorous trees in it recently. So let's say you have carnivorous trees in your world. Well, the average reader is not going to expect carnivorous trees. So if you want them to be in your really, really cool scene, you need to think of, how am I going to get them into the story before this scene happens, so that it's not too much that you're introducing to the reader at the same time. So a lot of times as a pantser, you're going to be reverse engineering your story, and that's okay. I think it's just sort of a difference between the plotter, as Darylin, you were saying, where you kind of sit down ahead of time and at least have a broad idea of where you're going. For us, it's more like, okay, I have landed in this strange place, and now I've got to kind of walk my way back out of it and figure out, how did I get here? And that's okay. It doesn't mean that you're doing, neither way is wrong. It's just both of them, you're getting to the same goal, where when the reader reads it, they're not going to be confused about, how did you get to this strange place with the carnivorous trees? So I'm going to jump in here with a question for you, because I have a question for plotters. With you being our token plotter, even if you're not really a plotter. Mm-hmm. So if you're a plotter and you have you have kind of your outline written down, so this is a pantser fear, is that if I write the stuff down, if I write down a plot, it will ruin my story. It won't feel fun. It won't feel spontaneous. I won't have the joy of discovering this as I write it. And are those fears grounded? Are those fears true? What would you say when addressing the timid pantser who is setting out in the terrible realm of the plotter for the first time?
Well, I think a lot of us are completely scarred by what we think of as outlining or plotting from having to write essays back in eighth grade where you had to do the 1A, 1B, 1C, you know, here's my introductory theme and blah, blah, blah. And so I think when we're thinking about what plotting is, I think all of us are kind of going back to there. And having that terrible, like, I mean, we didn't even understand what we were supposed to be writing to in the first place, let alone how to outline it.
Mm-hmm.
And spoiler alert, I used to write the damn essay and then go back and outline it and turn that in because I just didn't understand it. But I think I think a lot of us are approaching it, the idea of plotting in that way, where it just has to be super, you know, perfect and detailed and, you know, 1A, the character will walk down the path, and 1B, we will see the, you know, the carnivorous tree's eyes open up behind them, and 1C, you know, so that is not what's happening in plotting, or at least not as I understand plotting. And I do want to interject, I think I was going to try to say this earlier, but I didn't. So even though I'm a plotter, I will speak everything completely out of order. Teehee. But I think that is, so again, that false dichotomy of thinking like, I'm just only going to write down a little, you know, like the 1A and have to be, you know, devoid of emotion or have to be some level of preciseness. And if you get it out of order, it's all wrong. And I think, at least for me and what I have observed in like doing a carding process and screenwriting and working with some other folks who are looking at early is you're still working with the character and the emotion that's happening. It's just that you're not writing the 4 million words for every scene that you would typically be writing. And I think you know, the flip side of that is that the problem with, or not the problem with pantsing, but one of the challenges that comes out of pantsing is that you spent, you know, however many hours or days or weeks or months writing particular scenes so that you can discover what's happening. And then when you get to the end of the story and after that first draft and you try to put it together, like stuff's going to have to go and you're going to have to rewrite every single word. And if you've spent all of that time in there, you get that sunk cost theory. So we'll bring a little economics in here. You get that sunk cost theory where like I spent, you know, however many days or weeks trying to write just this one scene and discovering my carnivorous trees and, you know, and all of their flaky, delicious bark and the smell of the forest and blah, blah. And so it's really hard when you go, you know what, that scene doesn't work here, or actually they're carnivorous pine cones, or, you know, like whatever it is you discover by the end of the story, it's hard to let that writing go. And so you're going to spend a lot more time mired in the mud while the carnivorous plants are eating at your ears, trying to get, you know, trying to fix that. And so I think that's like that's the flip side of simply discovery writing, is that you do spend a lot of time writing words that probably you're not going to be able to use.
Mm.
And so, yes, I understand that fear of writing it all out, but I think the concept of doing that really gross outline is a little bit wrong. I think a lot of times, like I recommend a carding method where you're just writing out a little bit of the detail and you're not, and you're looking at the character and the emotion they're feeling, and why that's driving a particular action that's happening, rather than, you know, 1A, they will cross the room, 1B, blah, blah, blah. So mm-hmm. I don't know. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And I will say, as I become a more experienced writer, I do find, like you were saying, the sunk cost theory, what I'm finding is that one way or the other, the devil will have his due. Mm-hmm. So either you can plot first and then write your story, or you can write your story first and then do just a crap ton of editing. And either way, you're going to be doing work. It's just sort of, I think the difference is the plotters do it up front, and then there's less editing that happens on the back end. And the pantsers do a lot of writing up front and then have to do a ton of editing on the back end.
Right. I think for me, as part of what is appealing to plotting is that I'm a little bit of a perfectionist, and I do get stuck in that, like, I have to write it perfectly the first time. And then I do feel kind of invested in my beautiful yellow swirly wallpaper description on the wall, and then you know, in a particular scene, so it's hard to let that go. But I think that still the sunk cost theory, but I think that spending that time not actually writing the words, but you know, using note cards and kind of sketching out the ideas, you know, and thinking about great master artists like Leonardo da Vinci, and you know, made these beautiful sketches before he did a lot of his paintings. And so I feel like outlining is a little bit like that, where you're storyboarding or sketching out your story before you go in there. And then you can try a couple of different things without having painted the entire Mona Lisa 14 different times, you know, in the wrong smile or the wrong angle or the wrong, you know, hand position. You know, he spent a lot of time sketching that out. And I think that's the beauty of outlining, is that you can do that sketching and really refine getting the perfect pose or smile or whatever before you paint it.
I like that.
So
yeah, I like that analogy.
There we go. My work is done here.
Brilliant. You're all welcome. Go right. Have a fabulous day. No, don't leave. We're not done yet. So what I will say is, if you are a pantser and you want to steal some plotter techniques and incorporate them, you don't have to totally like go over to the enemy camp, and become a terrible, terrible, awful plotter. But if you want to steal some techniques, one of the things Darilyn was talking about is doing a little bit of thinking and carding and whatever technique works for you, rather than writing out in excruciating, exhaustive detail, like she was mentioning. You know, we have this terror of plotting from our high school trauma of writing essays. And so if you don't want to do that, and that's a bridge too far for you at this point in your writing career, when you sit down to write, if you don't have, like, if the scene's not just falling onto the page, like, assuming the scene's not just falling onto the page as soon as you see that blank cursor, write down a quick little synopsis for yourself of, here's what happened before, like, last week on whatever episode. Just write a quick little synopsis of what happened last time, and then write, what is your character's feelings right now? What is their agenda? Like, just those two things. What are their feelings? What are their agendas? If you need to say something like there's a volcano that's about to erupt that's also germane for the story, you can add that in. And then do like two or three, not even five, but 2 or 3 minutes of brainstorming. Give yourself some options of they could do this, they could do this, they could do this, they could do one, they could do two, they could do three. Or four could happen. And what I have found when I've done this is that a lot of times my first idea is the cliched idea because it's the easy one that comes to mind. And then the second idea is, this is a terrible idea that I will never do, but it comes to mind easily again because it's such a terrible idea, I know I'll never do it. And then the third or fourth idea that I have are kind of the more creative ideas. And usually what I end up writing is some combination of several of these things that are all rolled into one. But it does help me a lot in those moments when I'm stuck and it's a little bit plotty, but it's still a lot of discovery writing. So you don't feel that you're betraying the noble pantsers discovery writers. And I will also say that I think that is a false dichotomy to say you are either this way or that way. As with most things, it's a continuum. It's a spectrum. You are not 100% one way, you're not 100% the other way. Sometimes you're more this than that. It's okay.
As you were talking about that, that made me think, the one more aspect I think people really fear from thinking about outlines and plotting from the pantser perspective is that it feels very analytical and logical and not creative, which I will give you if you're doing it in that 1A, 1B, 1C thing, it is very hard to tap into that flow state and your subconscious, because I think what pantsers are innately understand, if not, you know, overtly understand, is that is that trying to get out of the analytical left brain into the right brain, whatever space, so that they're really writing from the subconscious and really writing in that deep, rich, creative well. And I think that you can, you can train yourself to be a little bit like, just like you said, like, right, you know, have opportunities to, even if you're not going to outline from the beginning in that very analytical state, like trying to figure out how to get to that subconscious creative state while doing that outline aspect. And I think one of the techniques you just talked about is one of the ways to do that is to, and I think even for plotters, there's still some, writing on the page to kind of get into characters' heads or to try to think about, you know, how would I get from A to B? And there's still a little bit of writing that happens there. It isn't that you're not writing that. It's just that you're not like creating giant, giant scenes to do it. But I think you still do have to, that is the fear that it's that analytical versus the creative subconscious brain space. And I think you still, if you're doing plotting well, you really are tapping into that subconscious space and finding ways to do that. So just wanted to acknowledge that. For me as a plotter, I still spend a little bit of time like writing, you know, interviewing my characters on the page and kind of letting them get out and speak and stuff. I just don't try to pour that into a rigid scene and make it beautiful and detail the wallpaper and stuff. So I think you're still doing a little bit of that work. It's just that you're not, you just aren't writing like crazy into a detailed scene. So
I will then ask you as our representative plotter for today, what happens when you have a plan, you have plotted out what you think is going to happen, and then you start to write and something else happens instead?
Oh gosh. I typically go with it just at least for a little while to see what's happening. I'd say, okay, well, we kind of said this before the show got started. Like, isn't it a military thing? You create a battle plan and then it pretty much goes off the rails right away. But if you walk in with no plan, what was it that you said, Molly?
So the saying is no plan survives first contact with the enemy.
There you go. So at least you have something to go with. And I think this is where, like, yes, you are going to constantly run into, oh, that isn't going to happen exactly how I thought it was going to happen, or ooh, here's this new completely shiny idea. And I usually, if that happens, step back and say, you know, I might write it a little bit just to see where it's going and if it's a better idea. But even as a plotter, there are tons of plot bunnies that spring up. That is an inevitable piece of anything. But because I have a plan, when something springs up, I have something to test it against to say, okay, if I go to the left instead of the right, am I going to be able to take a path and get back on track? And is this going to serve even better to get to my destination? Or does it reveal to me that the plan that I had was complete crap and I actually want to go to Disneyland instead of to a SeaWorld, and that would be a better story for my character, a better solution for the story? Or is it just merely a mirage plot bunny? And if that's the case, I usually, so when I get ideas that are kind of off the beaten path, I'll look at them a little bit and try to test them against my overall story. And then if it does just appear to be a plot bunny, I'll take enough notes so that I can recapture that. You know, I might write it down on a card, and then I have what's called plot bunny daycare that I definitely get from NaNoWriMo. All those geniuses there. But I'll write it down in a thing. And then I have a literal basket that is my plot bunny daycare. And I put it in there. And that way my brain has captured it, or my brain will let go of it because I've captured it on paper. So I can always go back and find it. But but then I can say, okay, where does it go? And if it does look like, oh, there's really something here, I can pull out my outline and say, and see how it works with my outline. And do I have to completely redo my outline? Do I have to just fix a couple of things? And again, your subconscious will deliver. Like once you create an outline, you have a pattern, and your brain likes to solve problems. That is what it's supposed to do. It's a pattern making machine, and it's supposed to solve problems. But it can solve them, I think, a lot more effectively if it has, you know, at least an outline or diagram of the problem it's trying to solve. And then it will deliver a maybe even better and more elegant solutions as you go. And then sometimes it will deliver plot bunnies. But that way you can kind of constantly test it against the idea and not write for 100 pages and realize, oh no, that was just a terrible side quest that has nothing to do with my story, or that was, you know, just it's become this episodic thing. Well, it's a really fun episode. It doesn't actually forward the character or forward the things. And I think always, in at least the way I do my outlining, I'm always testing against, is this about character? Is this like pressing on their irreconcilable self that we get from Eric Witchie, that idea of a reconcilable self? And is it pushing them to grow and change, or to, you know, is it how is it affecting them character-wise against the plot that I've
got? That is very thorough. I like that. I like also the plot bunny daycare, and I really like the idea of sort of having a plan that you can test your beautiful brainstorms against and say, like, hey, this is a great idea, but it's a great idea that's not good for this story, or this is a great idea that is a good fit for this story. Mm-hmm. So recently, when I was moving, I've made a big cross-country trip, and one of the things that we did is we had a plan of, like, here's where we're going to drive. We're going to go from here to there. But if we decided to pull over at a roadside stop, or we decided to go to a restaurant or something like that, that wasn't on our original plan, we could still, you know, get off the road and then get back to our original plan. It's not like if we decided to stop at, you know, this restaurant instead of the other restaurant, then we got completely derailed and ended up in Kentucky instead.
Mm-hmm. Well, and if you do pass something that's like, oh, well, it is 100 miles out of our way, but we really super want to see the giant gopher with the ball of string, and that would be such an educational and cultural experience that we must have, then you can still do that and just understand, this is going to delay us by a day, and here are the phone calls we need to make, or the, you know, the reservation we need to cancel at the hotel or whatever. So that still helps you.
Yep.
I do want to turn the question back to you, because what do you do as a pantser, as you're writing and sit, and I think at a certain point, it's false to say like you're completely writing into the dark. Like you're at a certain point, you have an idea at least of where a scene is going to go, if not like eventually the story is going to go. But if you're following a character, like how do you prevent it from becoming an empty side quest, or just a simply an episodic story where like, yeah, cool stuff's happening and we have the, you know, giant golfer and the, you know, 100-foot-high ball of string. But did we learn anything here? Did that add to our move? So how do you prevent that, or how do you know when you've gone down the wrong path?
Well, I don't know if prevention is so much it's so much a thing that that we discovery writers, me as our representative, are into. So I'm revising my second book, or the second book in this trilogy right now, and I have a subplot that I just like totally went down into some kind of like weird rabbit hole Alice in Wonderland maze, and it was cool, and I really liked the characters, and there was a good antagonist, and there was all of this emotional stuff that I wanted to get into the story, and I learned a lot of things about the world. In fact, I learned who the new big bad of the next story was going to be, and ultimately I'm taking that whole subplot out of the book during my revisions. So on the one hand, I'm regretful that I feel like I'm not including all of this work that I did. I'm losing all of those words that I wrote. But on the other hand, I learned a lot about the world. So now when I'm rewriting it, I know that I have to incorporate all of these other things that I learned about the world into different parts of the story. What it's allowing me to do in my revisions, it's allowing me to take those pieces that I discovered in the subplot that's not staying in the story, and put them elsewhere in the book so that they can be there and they can foreshadow and they can point the reader towards the right things. So I don't feel necessarily that it was wasted time. So I think for pantsers, it's not so much that we want to prevent a waste of time, is that when we do waste time, we want to waste time constructively. And to take, you know, I have a folder that I call my director's cut, which is if I'm taking this out of the story, if I just throw it away, then I feel terrible. And maybe this is a hangover from NaNoWriMo, where when every word is precious and you're like, I can't delete a single thing. but I don't want to delete the stuff. So what I do is I take it out and I put it in my director's cuts file. And then it's there. And maybe that's like the pantser version of Plot Bunny Daycare, is I'm like, oh, my beautiful words are still there and they're still okay. And I can maybe make them into a short story later on, or they might become a different novel. I'm not just going to abandon them.
Put them out to the orphanage.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that idea of a director's cut file, because you could always add it back in later.
Yeah.
Take it around.
Exactly.
Well, I think that is a great idea, to keep that material and figure out, you know, if it is a side quest or whatever, you can always release it as a short story, mm-hmm. or a little novella at some point, and have just fun extra material for readers, because we always love that, right?
Yep.
So cool. All right.
So
anything else we want to look at for our SmackDown today?
I can't think of anything for the SmackDown. I think that it's definitely a topic that we can come back to, and we can come at it different angles. And if our listeners have any questions about, you know, how do you do character development as a pantser? How do you do it as a plotter? How do you steal techniques from the other side? So the way that I look at it is, again, if it's sort of transgressive, then I feel like it makes me more willing to do it. If I feel like, like I'm stealing the enemy's information, not that plotters are the enemy, but I think a lot of pantsers feel that way. Like we feel like the proper writers are plotters, and, you know, we feel like us discovery writers are not as respected in what we do and the way that we write. So, so it sets up this false dichotomy that we talked about. But if you think about it, that you're just borrowing these techniques and you're not like wholesale defecting to the other side, maybe you can get some use out of what the other side is doing, versus either spontaneity or brainstorming and thinking a little bit ahead of time.
Perfect. All right. Shall we move into our editing question for the day?
Yes, we shall.
Okay. So I just spent time editing a 100,000 word story that this person was in love with ellipses. Use them to interrupt dialogue, use them to trail off, use them for absolutely no reason that I could discern at all. So I wonder if you could help us understand how to use the noble and much maligned ellipses. Is that what you
said? Yes. The scraping sound that you're hearing is me pulling out my soapbox and then climbing up on it. So
take it away, Molly.
All right. So here's the thing. I blame mobile phones and chat and the internet in general for this. I don't know if this was the case before the internet and chat and mobile phones came along, but I know one of the things that we are all used to seeing is that when we're doing text messaging with somebody, you have that dot, dot, dot as they're texting you back and you're sort of waiting. And so we've all begun to think of this as like, oh, it's this pregnant pause, like dot, dot, dot. I'm going to get some more information after this. We also see a lot of times in social media when people are just saying, oh, isn't that great? Dot, dot, dot. And now you're opening it up to certain interpretations. And a lot of times that can be followed by either an emoji or a GIF, if you're pronouncing it correctly, or a GIF, if you're not.
Who's Jeff?
I don't have any strong opinions about this, but so a lot of times we are using this. We've got almost two different forms of writing. We've got internet writing, which there's an amazing book that's out. I can't remember the author's last name. Her first name is Gretchen Butterlet, but she wrote this book that's called Because Internet. And it's talking about how like the linguistic patterns of internet communication and how it's sort of different from every other form of written communication. But what we're seeing is with this abuse of the ellipses is internet form of writing falling into other forms of writing, and our other forms of writing do not have the same things that internet writing has. We don't have emojis in our books mostly. We don't have little moving pictures or any kind of pictures unless you're writing a children's book that sort of helps you use some shorthand for just instead of just writing out what you mean to say. Because internet, Gretchen McCullough. Thank you. Yes. So what happens is the ellipses gets put in a lot of places where it shouldn't be. And a lot of times it gets put in where there should be a dash or a period or an exclamation mark or many other forms of punctuation. The only place that you should be using it is if the character is legitimately trailing off or pausing. And my rule of thumb when I'm doing editing is you get five. Like in your whole book, you get five. So use them very sparingly. And it's a completely arbitrary number, but I worked with not just one, but several authors who were equally in love with just putting them in everywhere in lieu of any kind of other punctuation. And that's when I came up with the rule of five. You get five. Mm-hmm. But consider, before you use it, could you use other punctuation instead? If the character is pausing, so that's one of the things we see a lot is, you know, John, I have to tell you something, ... because people are trying to create a moment of tension. But you can write out, as a writer, you can write out, John, I have to tell you something, period, she paused, and then write what she told John. And it has the same effect on the reader because to the reader, they have to slow down their reading when it says she paused because now you're breaking that train of thought. You're forcing the reader to pause. You're controlling pacing using something other than ellipses. If you're using them all the time, what happens is the reader becomes desensitized to them. So they actually lose the effect that you're trying to create, which the effect you're trying to create is tension and a sense of pause and a sense of slowing down and controlling of pacing. So it's kind of like putting salt in something. If you just salt everything, eventually people will become desensitized to it and not taste it anymore. So don't oversalt your stories.
And it is like all of that salt that has sprinkled out on the counter around your plate, right?
It's just everywhere. Also, if you ever want to see editors get really annoyed about something, go onto any social media platform and just ask anybody who's an editor how they feel about it. And you will find that editors feel very passionately about this and many of them are not happy with it. So if you want to appear as if you are a more professional writer, limit yourself to your five and don't go over that limit.
And use them in the right way.
Use them in the right way.
Yes. So, awesome. Okay, great tip. Well, this has been a fun start to our plotter versus pantser discussion line. I like it a lot.
Me too. I would say we should plan to have more of these, but you know, we'll just see what happens.
Okay. We'll get into the nitty-gritty of plotting versus pantsing at some point. So all right. Well, it's been super fun talking to you today. And do you have exciting plans for the next week or two?
I plan to actually start writing again. So that'll be exciting.
Yay. Awesome. So, all right. Well, when I'll report back next time on all the exciting things we learn at Willamette Writers. It's their 50th anniversary of their conference. So exciting. So.
Congratulations, Willamette Writers.
Yay. So, all right. Take care, and everyone, thanks for listening. And also a little shout out to Nicole Ritson, our podcast technician and producer. She does lots of amazing work getting these together for us. So thanks, Nicole.
Thank you, Nicole.
All right. We'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Bye.